The 12 signs of the zodiac are divided into groups of 3 to represent these seasons. The 12th, 1st, and 2nd signs, which are to the north, form the winter season, with the 1st sign due north. The 3rd, 4th, and 5th signs, which are to the east, form the spring season, with the 4th sign due east. The 6th, 7th, and 8th signs, which are to the south, form the summer season, with the 7th sign due south. The 9th, 10th, and 11th signs, which are to the west, form the autumn season, with the 10th sign due west. It is evident that this diagrammatic arrangement, which resembles a horoscope, is a figure by which may be estimated not only the duration of world periods, but of every order of creation, greater and lesser. Thus the life of every atom is a kalpa, likewise the life of man, the life of the race, the life of the planet, the life of the solar system, the life of the universe, and the life of cosmos itself. As will be noted, throughout all manifestation each of these kalpas is a fractional part, in turn, of a still greater one, until at last time which is their basis and indispensable to their existence is so merged into eternity as to be incapable of further differentiation. Every 24 hours the whole cycle is reenacted in mortal time. The smallest kalpa may be but the fraction of a second's duration, while the greatest may endure for countless millenniums. While in time and magnitude these periods differ widely, still the diagram is a proper symbol of them all. For regardless of their magnitude all obey the same principle of periodicity and manifest the same general mathematical characteristics of form and progression. For example, the RO 236 lectures on ancient philosophy. Tation of the Earth upon its axis causes one of the 12 signs of the zodiac to rise sequentially every 2 hours upon the eastern horizon, so that the 12 complete their revolution in 24 hours and thus make a minor kalpa, or period. In its revolution around the sun the Earth also passes through the 12 signs of the zodiac in 12 months, thus constituting a greater kalpa. Again, through the precession of the equinoxes the sun retrogrades through the 12 signs of the zodiac in approximately 25,000 years, which is therefore called a great sidereal year, and by which a still greater kalpa is established. From such well-known illustrations we may gain some slight idea of the complexity of celestial dynamics as disclosed by the principle of kalpas. In the first sign, which is due north, the Chinese universe had its genesis. The universal power, heaven, came into manifestation and a new day of wandering began. In the second sign the earth issued forth, and in the third sign, which is the first of the spring months, Puanku appeared. This kalpa then continued and the generations came forth, and through the spring, summer, and autumn months lived, reached maturity, and entered upon the inevitable decay. At last in the 12th sign, which is the first of the winter months, came the great deluge, which marked the close of that kalpa. All living creatures were destroyed except Puanku, who is the undying or unchanging creature. After a period of rest, the new kalpa was ushered in and Puanku in the third period came forth again to be the progenitor of human life. In this lesser reappearance, in which the kalpa of the earth rather than the universe is signified, the principle of Puanku became Fahi, the first emperor. It is said that the previous kalpa was destroyed because of its wickedness, but the archetypal man with his family, the 8 diagrams of the Yiking, was preserved through the deluge to perpetuate creation. We are informed by the secret doctrine that Puanku is the Sky Man, or the Monad of Human Generation. From Puan. Ku descend upon threads, as in the Platonic system, a number of subordinate powers called by the Brahmans the Manas, or Pagan Theogony and Cosmogony 237. The first men. There are 14 such Manas to a great Kalpa, and one comes forth at the beginning of each round, or day of manifestation, and also at the establishment of each root race. Thus the Noah of the Jews is the Visvatamanu of the Brahmans. He is the undying man whose progeny gradually increases to the dignity of a race. In the present cycle Puan Ku, the eternal man, came forth in the form of Fahi, the Manu, to establish the new human. ITY. Hence Puan Ku is Adam and Fahi is Noah or the second Adam, who preserved the generations through the Del Uch, which marked the close of a lesser Kalpa. Fahi, while generally regarded as the first emperor of the imperial line, is really an avatar or incarnation of the grand man. His color is blue like that of Krishna, and as Vishnu came forth at the beginning of his worlds in the form of a fish, so we are told that Fahi, the indigo emperor, had the body and tail of a fish. A similar philosophic basis exists for the legends of Dagon, Owens, and the fish gods of antiquity, yes, even Jonah, who, in the third sign, or period, was cast out of the whale's belly. An analysis of these various cosmological and theogonic systems shows the ancient pagan philosophers to have been unified in their concept of the principles by which the universe was called forth out of the abyss of absolute matter. Though the natural differences of terminology are obvious, and though the allegories have taken on local color, still their common underlying truths are evident even to the uninitiated. These ancient sages have thus met the exact requirements prescribed by Socrates in the first Alcibiades for all instructors, namely, that they must agree together and not differ. That which men know is the basis of their agreement, that which they do not know is the cause of their disagreement. That sages, widely separated geographically and with diverse environments and temperaments, should arrive at the same general conclusions attests the accuracy of their findings, being for the greater part superficial-minded. Modern thinkers do not arrive at any such unanimity of agreement, but grope their way in a maze of contradictions which they impart to the young under the 238 lectures on ancient philosophy. Guise of education. Thus in their frantic quest of the new or the spectacular, modern philosophers fabricate theories ex praes sib more of the bizarre than of rationality. While all speculation regarding the infinite may be regarded as inconsequential when compared with the necessity of solving the problems of daily life, such rumination is essential to right perspective, for by it the mortal creature is raised from the state of some eyeless earthworm to the estate of a participator in the whole pageantry of universal procedure. In the past man has been oppressed by his own sense of inferiority. During the Dark Ages it was presumptuous to the point of heresy to speculate either upon the eternal laws by which he was governed, or the nature of that vast power which brooded over him and measured both his comings in and his going out. Today this bogey of fear persists only in a few isolated districts where the earthworm still wriggles in his native habitat, declaring that there is no sun because he cannot see it. The world is now coming to realize that thought is not heresy, but that not to think is to live in a concept of existence equivalent to the grossest blasphemy. There is nothing terrible or vengeful about the universe, nor does it turn disdainfully from the honest searcher into its mysteries. Creation stands forth unafraid and welcomes analysis of all its parts. It is said in holy writ that none shall look upon the God of Israel and live. But Israel's God was the Lord of another day, and woe unto him who shall turn back from this new day to worship the irate gods of yesterday, for he shall perish from the narrowness of his own vision. The God of tomorrow stands forth in all its majesty of suns and moons and stars. Its extent is from space to space, and eternity alone confines it. Man, gazing into the eyes of man, beholds therein his Maker. His Creator sings to him with the voice of the wilderness, and descends upon him from the stars that spangle the heavens by night. This God is not hidden behind flowing draperies, nor are his ministers avenging angels. Unmoved by the passing of ages, he contemplates the worlds that are his substance, and through his own mipt in man. Pagan Theogony and Cosmogony 239. Seeks to probe the depth of his own reality. This vast one has written his law in the heavens where they shall endure. Long after earthly codes have been erased from the memory of man, this God manifests his will in the endless progression and change by which things are moved from then to now and from now to then. This universal Creator fears not man's effort to understand him. Telescopes and microscopes may scan his features without offense. For what is the quest of knowledge but the God in man seeking the God in all? God is, man is. Therefore, man is God and God is man. But before man may consciously enter into his divinity, he must gaze upon himself in the all without fear and recognize himself in the all, gazing back without hate, steadfastly and unafraid. The rational soul thus gazes upon those glorious beings whose radiant natures are that mystical light which is the life of the beholding soul. The Pythagorean Tetractes. From the contemplation of the order and progression of the numbers out of the monad may be discovered the true relationship between natures and their cause. He who understands this mystery is of all men the wisest. Numbers are the keys to the flow of universal energy. Chapter 11.